Punters and dribblers, as always, we're brought to you by the greatest multivitamin ever conceived by man, Good Day. Now, the reviews continue to flow in thick and fast.
Have you got that one from the other day?
Yeah, can I read it out?
Yeah, read it out.
It's so good. It's actually fucking unbelievable. What has been really nice, Tom and I were reflecting on this the other day, is just how much people are finding it
beneficial to their
massively
life.
Beneficial to their life. I know that at the start there would have been a lot of cynics out there going, these cunts are full of shit, they don't know what they're doing, and you couldn't be more wrong, which just brings joy to my little heart and my little soul. Now I want to get up this absolutely elite review,
and we do appreciate the reviews, obviously. Look, it's like the feedback is positive, so that's good. But just being able to hear how it's helping you and the different ways you're seeing benefits helps us know, I guess, the most tangible. Cause there's like tangible benefits and there's intangible ones, like energy, for example. You can feel an improvement in your daily energy, whereas then there's like nutritional benefits like liver health or your fucking immunity generally being boosted. Those are ones where you don't really notice that until maybe you're on it for a while, and you say you've got two young children in daycare who come home sick as fuck, and then you just don't seem to be getting sick where you used to get sick.
Life-changing. 5 stars. Big fan of Hello Sports, so my viewers are always going to be biased. I actually bought it for my wife. Didn't mention who it was by and just let her see how it went for her. Mum of 3 kids and runs her own busy business while I also work 7 on 7 off away. After 3 days, she was hooked. Improved late in the day fatigue and mood. Come day 7, she had forgot to take her Good Day. Her mother was visiting and said the wrong thing and she snapped. Instantly says, I'm sorry, I haven't had my Good Day. Next thing, the mum-in-law is now tasting it and they're walking around the house like they both just discovered fire and were the only ones to know about it. Good result. Even got some alone time with the added less fatigue. With her, not her mum. That would be weird. But a look into the future, I suppose. So it's out there working its ass off, which is fucking terrific. There are downsides to being the fastest selling multivitamin of all time.
Yeah.
And that's that in the last month in particular, sales have just gone fucking through the roof,
which we love.
Tripled, I think, Tom. So we basically got caught with our pants down a little bit and not enough stock on hand.
Yeah, pants down, cold, little doodles.
It won't happen again. That's a Hello Sport promise. However, we are likely to sell out in the next probably 4 or 5 days, roughly. We will have stock for those with subscriptions.
Yep.
So you will never miss out. If you're a subscriber, you're good. If you are a new subscriber as of when we sell out, or you're a new customer, you won't be able to purchase. Well, you can purchase it, but it won't arrive for about 3 weeks.
Yes. So from here, if you start subscribing, you basically just locking it in so that when it lands, then you're good to go and you're straight back on the train.
So you'll know, Punters and Dribblers, we'll do a bit of a thing on the Instagram when we do a sellout, and you'll notice on the website it'll flick from buy now to pre-order.
Yeah.
So that'll be the difference.
Listen, it's not ideal, but it also really just means that it's been successful beyond our wildest imagination, and you just couldn't have planned for it to go as well so quickly. So we're fucking horny for that. We got more as soon as we financially could, we fucking ordered more. And it's just the way that it goes, the production, again, when you're getting primo quality shit, it takes time.
And it's got to be tested multiple times. There's a bit of a process. We've sped it up as much as we can. It is what it is, punters and dribblers. Bear with us. So we'll let you know when it sells out. But again, it'll be sometime this week. Again, and subscribers,
dude,
you're all good.
It's funny.
You're all good.
We've been looking at it going, geez, we might have a couple of days here where we don't have any. We'll see. But, you know, we should be all right. And then just each day it keeps growing. And there's like, obviously you're fucking pumped for that. But then you go, oh, shit, it might actually be a little bit more. Maybe it's going to be a week where we won't have any. And you're like, oh, fuck, maybe it's going to be 2 weeks. Then on the weekend, Eddie's like, it could sell out within days. I'm like, oh, my God. God, fuck. Yes, great. Thank you all. But also, fuck.
Yep. So subscribers, you're good. We'll let you know when it sells out, and fucking good on you.
Get the fucking pre-order in though. It's clearly good shit. You don't want to miss it. Just become a subscriber and then you're fucking good to go.
BeGoodHealth.com.au, code Dribblers for 20% off.
You are listening to the Hello Sport Podcast.
What is up, punters and dribblers? Welcome back to another episode of All Talk with your friends, your pals, your boys.
Your best mates.
Tom and Eddie here, Hello Sport Podcast. Back for another episode of All Talk. Now, just a bit of like peeking behind the curtain. Not the iron curtain, just the Hello Sport curtain.
That's right. Bit of a difference.
Well, a different type of curtain, different
fabric used, yep. Tom.
Correct. This has been recorded a couple of weeks and before you're hearing it. So there are obviously going to be some cricket machinations that will have taken place that we haven't asked about. So if you're like, hey, why didn't you ask about thing in the future I can't predict as I record this, now you know.
So now that you're aware of that fact, why don't you just sit back, relax, and enjoy what we do talk about.
Yeah. Who are we talking to?
We're talking to the great Ryan Harris, the Jaffa King, some people like to refer to him as.
King of the Jaffas,
the man who bowled the ball of the century this side of the century. That's my belief, at least, anyway. One of the great fast bowling products we've ever produced. Injury sort of, you know, got its claws into him, unfortunately. But a terrific man, a terrific yarn, Ryan Harris.
Hey, how are you? How's things?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, all good. Just hectic time coming into Big Bash. Yes. Well, other than a 10-day break, which has been ridiculous. But
is it ridiculous in the sense of just like you're sort of the season just starts to get going and then it's just like...
Yeah. Yeah, just, I mean, we had our game washed out, so it feels longer, but I'm just amazed that a national comp play four games, I think it was, and then stop for 10 days. It's just stupid, but anyway.
And would you say like they should just keep playing? I think they should just keep playing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, people will choose what they want to watch.
Yeah.
But it's just a unique thing. I think next year we go back to normal, but. You know, it's been amazing. So anyway, it is what it is.
Is that only happened this year?
As far as I know, because the test matches started so late, and then they obviously took it to Perth. Hopefully it's a one off because I know the players aren't fans of it. So I hope they don't do it again.
I don't remember year to year. Or day to day generally, but I was like, geez, I wouldn't mind just having some Big Bash on after the test. I just assumed that because the cricket's on, that's when they stop. But it does sort of, I didn't even think about it from the context of just literally pausing the competition for 10 days so we can watch a bit of test cricket.
Yeah, we've not everyone's had a 10-day break. I think most have had 5 or 6, but even still, like it's, we were the unlucky ones, I guess, and then had that washout. That wasn't great either. So
no.
But so how have you found coaching? Do you love it?
Good. Yeah, love it. Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, it's my first senior sort of role down in Adelaide. But I've been coaching pathway stuff for about 6-7 years in Queensland, so it's been good. But yeah, coming down here is big move back. I obviously grew up here, but you know, call Brisbane home, I guess. But it's been good. It's been good fun. It's challenging, but dealing with the players these days is a little bit different to the players I used to play with. You have to tickle their balls a bit more. So you have to do that. But anyway, that's just the way it is, isn't it? So you can't exactly tell them what you feel sometimes.
Is there a sort of a day in coaching training where they tell you how to tickle balls? Is there a right and wrong way to do it?
No, not really. I've just learned off watching certain guys do it who obviously have good relationships with players. That's the other thing. You've got to try and get up those good relationships and you sort of know who you can yell at and bark at and know who, if you do, they'll cower like a little puppy. So you just got to be careful how you do it you do it.
Yeah, it's interesting because that seems to be a reality that's reflected across a lot, like sport generally, right? You hear even...
And society.
Society. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Is it frustrating at times, given that, you know, you came from more of the no-nonsense era?
Mm.
Is it a frustrating thing to have to do when you see someone who just can't cop it?
It is, because it's sort of like it's mainly the time you're going to give someone a spray, or it's not just about spraying people either, but it's when you're trying to tell someone to me, and I mean, I won't do it unless I speak to my other coaches either. So, you know, to make sure it's not just me seeing something that's there or not there, but it's almost like some of the stuff you talk to them about, they should just know as professional sportsmen.
Yep.
And again, coming from the old back in my day words, you know, guys sort of knew, I guess, more about their individual games and more about the game, what seems more about the game, and they were more proactive in doing stuff in the game, I guess, or the way they trained. Don't get me wrong, they still train pretty hard now, but it just seems sometimes you've got to give them a kick, you know, kick in the butt to get them going every now and then, you know. So
would you say, generally speaking, it's like a lack of obsession in the game, or is it more of a work ethic thing generally?
I think in times it's probably work ethic. And again, I think that's just not, I'm not just talking about the group I coach, but
you're talking generally.
I better put that clear right away.
Sounds like you're coaching a bunch of pricks.
Yeah, no, I'm not. They're actually good folks. They do all right. They do like me as well. Well, they did until they probably see this. But no, I think, as I said before, I think it's society. I think you just look at, you know, younger people this day and age. I think it's harder for them to be motivated and probably think for themselves, I guess. That's the way I sort of see it. So, but again, that's only my opinion. And after this, I might not have a job. So
Nothing wrong with a little bit of honesty. No, nothing exactly. wrong with a little
yeah,
bit of honesty.
Well, that's right. Yeah, so, that's right. Exactly right.
So you said you grew up in Adelaide. You're from Sydney originally? Were you born?
I was born in Sydney. Yeah. I was born in Sydney, but moved over to Adelaide when I was quite young, about three and a half. So
where does your love of rugby league come from?
I get asked this a lot, and I sit on the fence a lot. rules are rules. I'm born in New South Wales, so I just cop so much in Queensland, living in Queensland for so long. But New South Wales, I'm born there, and, you know, obviously people say, you spend more time in Queensland, you're a Queenslander. I'm an adopted Queenslander, no doubt, but, you know, I still follow. Like, the Blues are always still the number one team that I follow. Absolutely.
And is it like a family thing? Obviously, not spending much time in New South Wales, but were your folks rugby league fans?
Yeah, my dad was, absolutely. My brother lives in Sydney now. He's lived in Sydney for 30 odd years. He moved back when he was quite young, so yeah, I've still got that link there as well. But yeah, Dad grew up. He grew up playing a bit of rugby union. But yeah, we always used to go out to the local footy in Sydney That short time I was there, even when we went back to visit family and friends and that, we'd always go and watch a game or two. So, and I'm a massive fan of it now. So, I've followed it ever since I was, you know, old enough to understand it properly. So, I followed the mighty Rabbitohs. So, passionate Rabbitohs supporter. So, you know, being in Brisbane is a lot easier to follow. You know, when I left Adelaide, there wasn't a lot of rugby league around. Now it's everywhere. So, it's a lot easier to follow.
We were, preparing, and I can guarantee you we do a lot of rigorous preparation before we talk to anyone, Ryan, but we were reminded of, I guess, you engaging directly in the rugby league world with rugby league media during the Ashes this year.
Yes.
when Buzz Rothfield, this sort of like the villain of rugby league journalism, so to speak, when he sort of was having a crack at, I think it was the dismissal, right? It was the stay in your crease situation with Bairstow.
Yeah.
And then you've happily, I'll quote here. So Buzzers, that's a shocking way to take a wicket. They should have called him back. And then you've come back and gone, you struggle with rugby league, best you leave cricket alone, go to bed.
Yeah, far out. Jesus, didn't that go big? That was just a throwaway comment. Might have had a bottle of vino or two, maybe three.
The best tweets usually come after a bottle of vino.
And in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. I'm not a huge Twitter, and I've stopped using it because the only time I really tweet would be about umpiring or when I'm pissed. So I'm giving it away. I still look at it. And then that night I hadn't sent a tweet for I don't know how long. So I just saw that. And I'm not a massive fan of Buzz, let's be honest, when he whinges and carries on. But no doubt that he's obviously a very well-respected journalist, and I won't take that away from him. But, I just at the moment it just felt right to write it. And, geez, I woke up and my wife tapped me on the shoulder and said, what did you do last night? I said, what are you talking about? She goes, you you've been on Twitter again, haven't you? And you're fucking pissed. And I'm like, oh, I wasn't pissed. But why? And I realised what I did and what I've written. And I just couldn't believe how much coverage you got, to be honest. So, but it was just a throwaway comment, I guess. But he unfollowed me or he blocked me. So I must have hit a nerve with him.
It's
so
funny how
not that I ever looked at his tweets.
Yeah,
no, I know.
There's a few rugby league personalities out there that don't mind a block.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say.
Well, they're more than happy to share their opinions. However, you know, whether it be salacious, divisive, fucking life ruining, and then as soon as you come back with any sort of feedback,
well, they you must agree with them.
Yeah, I know. To block is it's pretty piss weak. We've also, I won't name Danny Widler in by name, but he's blocked us as well. So
no, we won't be naming Danny.
If you cop an abuse, if they're copping abuse, fair enough. But that's a bit of banter. I mean, that's not if that's abuse, then he's just doing a very he's not a strong man. So, but no, it wasn't by any means a jab. It was just more of a mate. Just shut up and just go to bed.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't not a jab. It was a little jab, but it was
also
a good one.
Also, Buzz, get around the nation, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, let's support the boys a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think that should be going without saying in the Ashes.
That might have been part of it as well. Just, you know, what happened, and there's an easy way for that not to happen, and that's for a batsman to stay in your crease.
Exactly right.
And that doesn't happen. So, and that's another topic. But, it was just, I think, going back and thinking about that, it was just at the time, I just thought, I felt that was right. So, anyway, I did it.
Were you ever looking for, little opportunities to exploit the opposition like they did over there in England? Like, they obviously noticed something with Bairstow continually leaving the crease early. Like, would you and the boys look for similar things when you were over in England or your time – you know, in Ashes contest?
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole part of the game, the mental game and trying to outsmart your opposition. And I wouldn't say, and this is the way I would the take I have on it, and obviously I wasn't over there, but you don't necessarily look for that to do that all the time. That's just not, but the way that he was, and I actually noticed it two or three balls before it happened, he was taking the piss. You know, he's walking out his crease and been a little bit, I wouldn't say, well, maybe arrogant's the right word, but you know, just walk, because if you don't see it a lot, obviously. But so Paddy Cummins supposedly, I think he came out publicly and said, "Oh, I noticed he was leaving his crease early, and he wasn't, you know." And the fact that Alex Carey got the ball, threw it straight away. If he had waited a second and then thrown it, and then you say, "Nah, come on, that's not right." But the fact he did it all in one motion, it's no different than if he's up to the stumps to a spinner and the batter leaves it and just walks out the crease. He's going to take the bails off. So. You, and that's the thing. So Paddy's obviously seen that, and maybe a couple of other boys had seen that and said, "No, hang on, he's going way too early here." You could say he's not trying to steal a run, but I guarantee if he was in his crease, he had got back and the ball hit the stumps, and it ricocheted off into probably the onside where there's no fielders, they would have run.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's no doubt. Yeah. So because that's what you do, because you're trying to be a smart ass, you stop them from being a smart ass, and then you be a smart ass and run. So, but you're always looking for ways to outsmart your opposition, no doubt. That's how you potentially that can be a game changer. And whether that was or not, but you're always looking for those little. Obviously, it's got to be within the rules and the spirit of the game, no doubt. But you know, the uproar that came from bloody hell from England after that, especially when that video surfaced of Johnny Bairstow doing it way I just said it. Yeah, exactly the way, holding, wait for him to walk out and take his bail off. That's just ridiculous. So a little bit of hypocrisy coming in there, especially from old Piers Morgan, who still goes on about it now. He needs to get another lot better life.
Yeah, yeah.
Did that response surprise you? Because it was pretty over the top.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And then on top of that, you know, the scenes, the boys walking back through the Lord's Pavilion.
Yes,
that probably was the more surprising thing. You know, having been there and walked through that room, it's such a privilege to be in that room, and you you do the tours and you get the bit of the history of Lords when you're there, and to be in that, it's quite an expensive thing to be a member of that MCC group, but to be in that long room is a huge privilege. So to see those scenes and the abuse that the players got was just unbelievable. That to me, I just couldn't imagine that, you know, walking through and getting that. Because the thing is, as we saw in those pictures, you're literally walking through the crowd. They're right there. Yes. So, you know, they're literally less than an arm's length away. So if they're saying something, that's in your face. And that's obviously what we saw. So that to me was probably the biggest surprise. But, yeah, to see it linger and go on as long as it did, you know, it cost, you know, spirit of the game, we're cheats again, and it cost the game. You know, that's ridiculous. So, I was definitely surprised how big it got. And also as well, England, some of the England players jumping on the back of it. They wouldn't have done this. Stuart Broad, you know, he's come out. I know he's backtracked since and probably said he went over the top a bit with Paddy Cummins and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, ultimately you're there. You're in charge of your actions. We can sit here and say the sandpaper stuff wasn't a big deal now because we passed it and we've gone through it, but it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing some of the players, I guess, react was a little bit disappointing as well.
Punters and Dribblers, we are brought to you by Neds. They are the betting platform of choice here at Hello Sport. Now, you can follow along all of our bets at in the About Even private group on the Neds app. You can also follow our profiles. As I've been saying, my civilian bets are where I seem to be doing my best work. My About Even bets starting to improve. I can feel myself starting to improve. I did hit two on the weekend.
After back-to-back triple staked losses.
The triple staked losses for unit scoopers have absolutely cut to fucking the Tiger King. I may never recover from this, but the civilian bets is where you can see me getting my work, and that is on the profiles.
Good for you, Tommy. Ned's best in the business. Come join along. Join our About Even group if you'd like as
you
well.
You mean, you know, wow, Eddie, just you're just repeating me now, are you?
I didn't hear you say that.
You just where were you? Where were you?
Pixies.
Where were you, mate?
Pixies.
Full pixie stuff. So now you're just going to say, you're going to talk about the fucking profiles tab as well? You're going to talk about the About Even group? Yeah?
About Even group.
Yeah, how do you get in there?
That's what I said, Code Dribblers.
Oh, okay, there you go, good. Yeah. What's this ad for again?
Neds.
Oh, yeah, great point. Glad you're listening. Pixies. Pixie Simps. Shout out to Neds. We love you, Neds. We love you. Go Manly.
Now, you win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Punters and Dribblers, there's 2 days left to be in the chance to play golf. Be in with the chance to play golf at Shorty's with myself and Eddie. Buy a six-pack of Big Day Rosé at hallosport.shop. You will go in the running. We pick two winners from the month of April. But what are we doing month of May? Because we are working our way through the remainder of the most recent vintage. Got a couple left that we want to get rid of before we then turn all of our attention to the end of the year.
Just feeling generous, Tom.
We're feeling generous, and it's sale time.
We just thought, fuck it. If you buy a case and you use the code Manly, you get $50 off the case. If you buy two cases, you get $100 off.
Yep.
You get what I'm trying to say? Go to hallosport.shop. Bang, Rosé on there, code Manly, $50 off a case. Pretty fucking generous if you ask me. But we love the punter and we love the dribbler. And we're just like, let's get this vintage out there to the people that want it most.
Let's get it in the gullets of the nation.
That's right. Gullet up.
We were having a discussion the other, well, it might have been yesterday, just about our fast bowling, the cartel we've currently got right now, the big four. Obviously, Lyons just taken his 500th. And then Stark is Stark top five all time. And then you've got Hazelwood and Cummins just, I think, maybe like 4 or 5 wickets outside of top 10 status. Where do you, as an esteemed ornament to the game, where do you see this foursome right now? Like, where do they rank?
How awesome are they?
Yeah, they're unbelievable. They're unbelievable, aren't they? I guess, I mean, there's no doubt that they're going to be, if not, well, I think they're up there. My favourite was... I used to watch a lot of old stuff, and obviously, you know, Lily Thompson were fantastic. But, you know, my favourite were Dizzy. I have to say that now because I'm working with him, so I've got to say Dizzy. But, you know, McGrath, Warren, and then who's the other one out of that?
There's
the three out of that. Who was that?
Brett Lee?
Yeah, or Brett Lee. Yeah, sorry. So those three or four together, that to me, you know, through that period and era that they had there when Ricky was captain, the amount of success they had, that to me stands out. But and the thing about it is, this group here, being honest, obviously that they've done a great job and they're doing a great job. But in 6-7 years' time, probably when they finish and we look back, I think that's when we're going to realise just how good they were or they are.
Yep.
And I think that's sort of, to me, there's no doubt that I think they're definitely up alongside that four I mentioned, and even Andy Bickle, I'll throw him in there because he's a good mate of mine too, but he was around that time, and he couldn't get a game. So, I look at it and definitely think they're up around, definitely going to be, I think, equal with, in my year and what I remember back as far as I can, they're going to be up there. There's no doubt. I think, as you see, Lyon in the 500 club, Starks, as you said, he's you know, gaining at a rate of knots on these other guys. The other two are going to, you know, they've still got a bit of time left in them, so they're still going to take a lot of wickets. So, you know, these four might be in our top, you know, six, maybe five, if not five, probably six, and, you know, by the time they finish. Mm. So I think if you look back at that, as I say, you know, a couple of years down the track, you're going to have to turn around and say they're going to probably equal, if not be better than the best we've ever had.
Well, like on that, we were sort of discussing this yesterday as well. You know, people like Mitch Stark, who is not that far away from going past the great Dennis Lilly, he just doesn't feel like he gets the respect he deserves from the cricketing public or Australia generally.
Yep.
Do you think that is just he's just a victim of you haven't retired yet, so therefore people don't reflect properly until someone's retired, or is it something else, do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I did an interview not long ago, only a couple of hours ago, and similar question, not so much about Stark, but about this team. I think this whole team, listen to some commentary over the last week, this whole team doesn't seem to be well-liked from the Australian public. So you talk about Starkey. I don't know why that is because, maybe does it stem from comments from a few years ago from Warnie about how he thought he was a bit soft and about,
potentially,
you know, was he driven or, you know, maybe, I don't know. I know Starkey, you know, he's a bloody hard worker. You know, he deserves every accolade he's getting at the moment. But why is that? I don't know. I've been a little bit frustrated and probably not angry, but with the chat over the last couple of days that I've heard that majority, as some commentators were saying, that they just don't like to seem to like this Australian team. There's no characters or there's no this or there's no that. You know, I look at, okay, there's no Shane Warne. There's no, you know, there's no good stories coming from after dark anymore, you know, all that sort of stuff. But you know, Andrew Simons, but these guys are, you know, Mitch Marsh is a character. Uzi Khawaja in his own way is a character.
Travis Head.
You know, there's characters in this team. And the other part of that is, do you think back to those guys that I just, you know, Lee, Gillespie, McGrath, player access then was pretty good. You know, broadcasters play a lot of money. They want content. They want to get out to what to the public of what these players are and who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, it was pretty good back then when I came into it, and even when I towards the back end when I finished, there was a lot more content. You know, as I said, the broadcasters want to get more and more. I see it now, and what the players do for broadcasters now and social media. Well, some of their own, but they do so much more stuff to try and get that out there, to try and get themselves out there, or Cricket Australia are trying to get them out there. So I just find it hard to, you know, sit here and think that how people can't like these guys. Well, the main thing about this as well is they're winning and people are having these thoughts. And that worries me a bit because if they're losing, this they'd be the most hated team in the world.
Yeah, it's funny though, right? Like I sort of wonder whether the perception – that they're disliked is almost driven by, you know, there's been a bit of like generational friction between not so much your era, but like your punter, your Ricky, Langer, yeah, Hayden, like that era. And now there's that friction there. But like whether that's more driving that conversation around them, I can only speak for myself here. But like I love them. They're like, especially like, I feel like we, in Australia, like if you're winning, I don't really give a fuck what you're doing.
Yeah,
like that was sort of the way it was with like Warnie and shit. It was like, oh, Shane's up to no good. It's like, but he's just taken seven for us, so play on.
Yeah, let him do what he wants. Exactly right. And then that's the funny thing. I mean, we've had some big dramas. You know, that as I said, the South Africa stuff wasn't great for the, but they've worked really hard to get back to. Because ultimately, when you're in that team, you're out there to put on a show for the fans, for the public. You know, obviously, you know, that's what you're trying to do, and you're trying to win for Australia. Because as we say, we don't like losing. And, you know, we hate losing. We don't do anything outside the rules. Like in South Africa, that was a, you know, it was a horrible thing that we don't do that sort of stuff, but we win games. And that's the mantra of the Australian cricket team. So, you know, if we're doing that, then, and we're doing it well, and we're doing it in an entertaining way, which I think we still are with the way David Warner comes out with his back against the wall again and does what he does. We're doing that to please the fans, but they just seem to, I don't know, maybe it's the Justin Langer factor as well, that the way that was handled and it was all on the players. I don't know. I just don't know. I can't put my finger on what it is that that what these guys have to do to be, you know, spoken about in a better way and I guess, well, more well-liked.
Yeah, it is interesting because especially for a year like the year we've had.
One-day World Cup, Test Championship, like
Ashes retention.
Ashes retention. I don't know. I don't know what else we need specifically, but, I mean, there it is. Well, I've got to ask, how do you think your old mate Mitch Johnson was feeling when Warner got 164?
Yeah, I've been in touch with him quite a bit, actually. I'll put that out there. But, he was pleased. He's obviously pleased. He wants the team to do well. So,
but does he want Warner to do well?
Yeah. No, he said he was happy for him. But, okay. That whole thing, I think he had some really good points in that sort of article he did. He probably got personal, and there's a reason behind that, which I obviously won't go into, but, you know, there's history there, and there's some things going on behind the scenes. So, but, he, you know, talking to him, he stands by his comments. Maybe he might have done it and said it differently, you know, with reference to the sandpaper stuff and maybe the personal stuff. But that's Mitch. He wears his heart in his sleeve, and he, at the time, you know, when he does something like that, it's not spur of the moment. He thinks a lot about what he does. So, you know, he's thought a lot about that, and he felt as though he needed to get it out. You know, and again, a lot of the points are valid. As I said, I speak to him quite a bit. I've told him I didn't necessarily agree with some of the stuff that was in it, and that's okay. But instead, that's entirely his opinion on what he feels and what he sees. So, and that's what he's, you know, his job is to do, I guess, in that column than he does over in the West. So, but I can go, yeah, a lot of people have sort of made comment about that exact thing. Like he still wants this team to be good, to win. There's no doubt about that. I guess the details of it, you know, no one will probably ever know except him and David. So ultimately, I've said to him, I'd love for you to one day to, you know, go and sit with, you know, seek him out and go and sit with him and just talk it over, you know, whatever the beef is. So, and I think Justin Langer made that point as well in an article that he wrote. So, you know, ultimately, when we play together, we're so close. You know, not everyone's close outside of the boundary and everyone, you know, hangs out a lot, but, I mean, that group, when David was there, Mitch was there, and the group I played with, we were very close. We had some great success. We had some couple of bad losses as well. But, you know, we had such a great group of players and staff that, you know, that looking back on it, that time of life was so special. So, you know, even hearing all that and seeing and that, it's not ideal. I don't like conflict, and I don't like, you know, seeing guys that had such a great time, I guess, have a beef with each other. So let's hope down the track that they can, you know, sort it out one day. It'd be nice.
You say you talked to Mitch a bit, and I'm just wondering, as a friend, and maybe not, but I'm interested as a friend whether you've had a quiet word to him about his new hairstyle.
I was over there 2 weeks ago, and I was literally catching up with him for dinner one night, and I haven't told him this, so he's probably gonna. And someone said to me, I reckon 2 hours before, I said, what's with Mitch's man bun? I said, what man bun? Anyway, I saw him, I was like, shit, he's got a man bun. I haven't had the balls to say it yet.
Yeah, okay.
But I've just told him now, he's probably going to listen.
Yeah, this is fine. This. It's way better to do it through like 3 degrees of separation.
Yeah, that's a perfect
Definitely took me by surprise. Don't worry about that. So.
Yeah, I think it's taken the nation by surprise.
It has.
To be honest. To keep on theme, Mitch Johnson, we were hanging out with the great Brad Haddon the other day doing some work with him.
Mm.
And he was just talking about how in that Ashes series, 5-0, obviously the sweep, we all remember it. He was saying that it was like one of the first times he'd actually seen grown men like terrified for their lives. How do you reflect on that time? Was it just a beautiful thing to be around watching grown Englishmen literally like shit their pants?
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. Honestly, it was just so we knew it. I mean, the pace that he was bowling was, and you know, I'd sort of played a game against Brett Lee and a game with him, and you know that what he used to do was just raw pace, and that was quick. But this series with Mitch, I don't know what it was. Something just clicked. You know, he was fit. I think he'd come back from injury a few months before and got himself so fit and strong. And you know, the way he even we went over it was a different year because we had an Ashes in England in 2013, and then we virtually came straight back to play here.
Because we lost
3-1.
That's right.
Yeah, there was something. It was a World Cup, something or Olympic, whatever it was. Might have been Olympics or something, whatever it was. But we just lost 3-1 over in England. I think it was 3-1, and we probably shouldn't have. That sounds silly. We're so close, but we were so far as well. So, but he didn't play that. But he went over for the one-day series after that, and that point there is where he planted the seed beautifully because he was – even in that series, he bowled absolute rockets. And Peterson, I think, Ian Bell, I think Cook, a lot of those the test batters were playing in that series. So he just planted the seed beautifully. So, you know, literally within 6 weeks or whatever it was, or maybe even less, we came back and we – I remember Michael, we got back to – we had a camp in Brisbane about 4 or 5 days out from that first test at Allan Border Field in Brisbane, and Michael pulled myself, Mitch, Sids, I think James Pattinson might have been the fourth quick, pulled us over and said, right, you blokes are going to win this series for us. Mitch, I just want you to bowl so fucking fast and then hopefully you get him on target, and if you're not in your leaking runs, then we're only going to use you in short spells, and then it's going to be up to you, Rhino and Sids or Paddo. You're the ones that are going to come on and just build the pressure and do that, and you know, don't let him get away, sort of thing. So he came on. So fast forward, going into net sessions, going to the test match, none of the batters, they saw what he was doing, and on the Gabba practice wickets, which are a night, they're like the centre, they bounce a lot. No one was getting in behind him, facing. He was rapid in that. So we just look, you know, even Sids and I bowling the net, bowling with him, we're like, fuck, he's on here. He's on. It's quick. Then going into that test, you know, the way Trott played, the way Peterson played, he just had this unbelievable raw pace. And then getting on through the series, you could just see it. They were dropping like flies. Unfortunately, Trotty went home with mental health stuff, which is not nice to see, but there would have been a little bit of fear. Had to be a little bit of fear in that as well. There's no doubt. Yeah. But getting through the series and just seeing what he was doing, it was just unbelievable. And then going on from that, a few years down the track, I did a couple of things with Ian Bell, actually, who it did like something around the Ashes series. And in the time that they were setting up, I was sort of talking to him a bit. I said, mate, you know what? And there was a little bit of talk from players that had been through that series in books or whatever that it was quick. And I sort of said to Bell, I said, mate, was it that quick? He goes, mate, like you just said then, our boys were absolutely shit themselves. I've never seen a group of batters, professional cricketers, be so scared and fear for getting hurt. But yeah, it was from this, you know, being on, I was sort of mid off a lot of the time, and it was just unbelievable. And you know, no better team to do it to than England. Absolutely. But you know, he definitely ripped through them. And again, as we saw, fortunately, that after that series, he scared a few too many off, and a few of them left the team for good. So he did his job.
Yeah.
So
that's what.
It was just proper raw pace. It was just unbelievable.
Love that.
What does it do for you having like your other bowler like just terrifying him? Does that like change the way you have to play, or does it make it easier for you?
Easy is probably not the right word. It definitely helps because I know they're trying to smash the shit out of me.
Yeah, right.
So if I know that I'm doing my job and hitting my lengths and moving the ball around, whatever I do, I know I'm going to be hard to hit as well. I'm just not doing it 150k an hour. But and there's no doubt, I think I got 20-odd wickets, I think, whatever it was, but that definitely helped. There's no doubt that Sids and I definitely benefit from Mitch doing what he did. But that was the thing. I think we did so well in that series. We Sids and I, without pumping up my ties, but we complimented each other so well there because we did exactly what Michael asked. We didn't give, we didn't have too many bad overs here and there because it didn't allow them to get away, which also built the pressure. And then by doing that and not scoring runs, you know, Mitch could go off and have his break and then come back again, and there was no real damage done. you know, so Mitch could come on and do what he did and get even more wickets. So it definitely helps when you've got a bloke who bowls that fast. You know, it probably puts a bit more emphasis on what you're trying to do to make sure that you do, you know, stick to the plan and not let your mind wander and not worry about if you're not getting wickets and try and chase wickets, which, again, we spoke a lot about. It didn't really happen, but oh, no doubt it definitely benefited me. Obviously put a few more, you know, numbers in my wickets column without doubt.
How often do you watch the Divine Seed, the greatest?
Ball of the century. Second innings, yeah. Workout, first ball, yeah. Cool. See you, bro.
Yeah. Every year it comes up on my birthday. I thank people every year that comes up because it is nice to watch every now and then. But I must admit, I don't watch it. I don't bring it up very often. Every now and then my little boy who's eight, he's just starting to get into cricket. He's starting to watch a few more highlights of me and that comes up. But, you know, it's one of those things, I guess. It's, you know, that period around, I mean, that ball just was, it was the second innings, as you said, of the third test. We're 2-0 up. You know, that and Alistair Cook, who we also, going back to when Michael sat us down, we wanted to target him because he's such a good player. In 2010, we couldn't get him out. He scored a squillion runs. We knew how good a player he was. We knew if we were getting into him and getting him out early that was a big hole in their team. So, you know, to come out and I had a really good battle with Alistair. I got him out a few times. He got me a few times. But to be able to do that, as I said, the quick story on that is we're coming in, obviously, to that day, and it was a lot of the guys. We have a team room in a hotel, and a lot of the guys get down there just before they go, get on the bus, or walk down the ground to get taping. And that's normally probably, you know. So if we have to be on the field at say 10 o'clock, they're normally around there, down there about 8 o'clock, getting whatever they need to, having a coffee, having a chat. This particular day, I couldn't sleep. It was the only real time I was bloody nervous about going into a day's play, because knowing what we're about to do, or hopefully about to do. And I reckon I had about an hour and a half sleep. And then I got up, it was about probably 5 o'clock, 5:30, and I thought, I've just got to get out of my room. I'm up, I'm ready to go. I walked down to the team room. There was about eight blokes down there. They were the same. They were so nervous about the day. Really? And about what we were trying. Yeah, it was just amazing how the nerves around that. You know, potentially, you know, going 3-0 up, but winning an Ashes series, which,
yes,
for me, but a lot of these guys that hadn't done it had played, you know, a couple of blokes had played in a series or two and hadn't won. You know, that's a dream come true. You sit there as a kid, you know, these Ashes series and how good they are and how big they are. So, you know, we all sat and had a couple of coffees to keep us going and got down the ground. And then obviously going back to that, you know, to be able to rip out a ball like that was pretty good. One thing I don't tell a lot of, but that I was quite sore going into that innings. And my second innings overs were Michael actually took the new ball off me and gave it to Mitch because I was so stiff and sore at times. My first couple of balls were so bad. Like they'd be floaty or, you know, normally my first over would go for 8 or 10. But I made sure I might have had a couple of Voltarans this morning. But I remember running into bowl thinking, oh, stop. And I didn't stop and managed to do that. And I don't know how I did that. But, they were great times. I mean, so I get revisited with every year on my birthday. So, keep doing it, people.
It's beautiful. Good to see. No, it's actually –
well, it's like the ultimate Jaffa.
It's been known to cure erectile dysfunction in Australia, man. That's
how it's used. It's used.
Without a doubt. Yeah. You're talking about your injuries. Again, we were talking to a friend of the show, Brad Haddon, the other day.
Mm.
Even well, like he was basically saying that when I want to get to obviously you, I don't want to jump straight to your bloody retirement, but it was just off the back of you being injured. He had sort of said to us that you'd been bowling, and you're like, geez, my knee's sore. Just kept going though, like finished the day. And then you went for scans, and they were like, your knee was like completely broken the whole way through.
Yeah, that was. I remember that was always yesterday. It's 8 years ago now, but I missed the tour of the West Indies because we're having my first child. We had Carter, and so I didn't go there. So I sat back. I stayed back in Brisbane, trained, got myself in the best shape I've ever been, ready for this Ashes series, ready to go over and finally win an Ashes in England. And got over there, had a few bowls, and then we had this practice game and. I think it was a four-day game at Kent, I think it was. And I probably bowled, I can't remember if it was first, I think it must have been second innings, and I reckon I'd probably bowled 13 or 14 overs, and I just bowled the biggest pile of shit ever. And I'm trying to bowl for a spot in the first test, and I never really worried about being picked or not picked, because I was always, if I bowl well enough, I'm going to be picked, and if I'm not, then the other blokes bowl better. So I've never really, but this time I had this little, I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to be in that first test. And I bowled, 13, 14 overs, absolute pile of shit. And then in my 15th over, I was running the bowl and I felt a little click on my knee. And I knew my knee pretty well. I knew, you know, where it hurt, it was okay. Obviously, if it was damaged badly enough, I knew that as well. But it was sort of in the front left of me knee, and it was just getting sorer and sorer. But I managed to bowl a few. I think I bowled another two overs. Then I went off just to check with the physio, and he did all the checks, you know, twisted it, and it, with twisting and all that and all the stuff he did, it didn't bring up any pain. So I'm like, he goes, no, you're right, you're good, keep going. So got back out there and I took a Voltaren and whatever it was, and it was still a little bit sore every now and then. But anyway, I got another opportunity to bowl, and I bowled, I think, five of the best overs I bowled. And I was like, fuck, this is good. I'm back in the test group and test team. I'm good. But I finished the game and I could barely walk. And I'm like, fuck, this is not good. So gave it, I think we had another game in four days it was. So gave it a day, wasn't getting better. And then they said, we've got to send you to London, get on the train, go stay night in London, get some scans, and then we'll see how it goes. Came back, I wanted to play that second game, so I had to go down in the morning of the game to try and bowl to prove I was fit. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't run in. So knew something wasn't quite right. The day started. As the day went on, I kept going. I bugged the physio every 10 minutes. So, mate, have you got the scans? And he just, at the end of the day, he said, mate, just fuck off. I'll come and see you when I get the scans. Don't worry about it. Anyway, 2 hours later, he came and grabbed me, showed me the x-ray, and I just cracked the top of my tibia. I'd sort of cracked down the, well, not down the middle of it, but, just had this big crack in it. So basically what had happened with no cartilage, my knee was just pounding and forming a little hole, like almost like a brittle bone was real brittle and little hole. And then from that, it's just cracked from there. Right. So, I basically bowled five, six overs with the broken leg, but they were rippers. And they were probably the last overs I bowled, I think. So,
that was like, they just sort of said, hey, they were like, this is not something you could recover from or come back from.
Yeah, that's it.
Thing, or?
No, it was basically the damage had been done to my knee. So I had a great surgeon in Melbourne who had done everything possible. He'd taken stuff out of my knee. He'd put stuff in it. He cleaned it out when he needed to. So he was great. He was all about getting me back on the park because he knew I was coming to probably an end. He probably thought, to be honest, he said, he didn't say this until I was in Melbourne after I was getting it fixed from that episode, that he expected that what happened to happen probably 2 or 3 years before. So he said, you've done really well getting through to this. But when when the physio had sent through the scans to him, he looked at them. I got on the phone to him. I said, David, what do you think, mate? He said, mate, I reckon you've had a good run. This is it. This is the time. This is, you know, I can fix it. He said, he's going to fix it. I'll fix it for you. But what you've done basically because of the hole and because of the brittleness and no cartilage, you're just going to keep cracking it and going through it. So I got back to Melbourne eventually, had to take some bone out of my hip, compact it into the bone and fix it up. So, that was it. That was my last overs. So
Was that hard to come to terms with? Obviously, you were saying you wanted to go to England, you wanted to win over there. You'd found a little bit of form in those five overs. Was it hard news to get? Obviously it was, but was there part of you that deep down knew that maybe your body just wasn't quite right?
Yeah, that was it. Now, deep down, I was waiting for this to happen.
Yep.
But in saying that, I was, as I said before, I'd got to the best condition of my career. Like, I was at a good weight. I was strong. I'd worked so hard on my glutes and my quads to get them strong to protect the area. And I guess for me, yes, I sort of, deep down, I was accepting of it, probably not straight away, but I guess at the forefront of my mind, it was like, well, how can that happen now when I'm, you know, the best I've trained so hard to protect it?
Yeah.
I'm so fit, you know, why couldn't it have happened, 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. So at the time, it was I put a probably bit of a front on. I was like, you know what? Yeah, this is good. I've played 27 tests. I've done way more and exceeded way more, you know, expectations on test cricket than I ever thought I would. But in saying that, in the back of my mind, I was like, fuck, 27 is good. What about, you know, 20 more would have been, you know, just amazing. So yeah. Well, it took me a while to process it, but I was sort of putting on a bit of a front, I guess. And I, you know, the moment, I don't know if Had said it, but Chris Rogers tells a story. He still tells me I'm not retired, because I tried to give the speech to, you know, to the players, and I just lost it. I couldn't get my words out. I was like a bubbling baby. So, you know, because I just loved that team. I loved being in that team around that time, and it was just a great time of my life and our life. So. Yeah. That was a mess, but that was it. So I managed to stay on for the first two tests, I think, just to be with the boys, but then, yeah, left there. And again, leaving there was knowing I wasn't going to come back. That was bloody hard.
I bet. You were, I mean, late bloomer, not the right word necessarily, but you debuted after you were 30. Is that correct?
Late bloomer is probably the right word.
What do you put that down to, right? Because it's funny. I mean, you give hope to anyone over 30, not necessarily to someone like myself who's 34, but...
Well, there is hope.
There is still
hope. Never say never.
No, you never say never. Yeah. But
you're
obviously
not in the system. You know what I mean? No one knows who you are. But
can't play very well. But yeah, like, and you know, you saw someone like Mike Hussey who debuted at 30 or later, but then, you know, went on to like have a great career. What did you put it down to? What clicked for you? What changed that meant that you sort of
People will probably listen to this and probably sick of this story, but I was a loose cannon as a young bloke. I didn't mind going out and having a beer and you know, chasing the skirt, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. So I didn't really look after myself, probably in my early 20s, or late teens, early 20s. You know, and I was contracted for South Australia from about 19, maybe 20. You know, I was there for about 7 years, and I didn't play many games at all. It was only in the last 2.5 years that I started playing a few games before I sort of left. But yeah, so look, I wasn't looking after myself. You know, I at one stage lost my contract, I think about 3 years before I left. But then, thankfully for me, unfortunately, someone didn't take a contract, didn't agree to one, so I got that one back. So I sort of saw that as a second chance that I needed. And, well, that, you know, I didn't have much else. I finished school, but wasn't going to uni. I was working, I think, for a mate delivering gas around that time. So I wasn't, you know, doing a huge career things. But so I guess I saw that as a second chance to write, I want to be a professional cricketer. The coach at the time, Wayne Phillips, who we had a bit of a love-hate relationship at that time. We've been great mates ever since. But, you know, he sat me down and said, mate, you're so lucky you got this second chance. Not many people get it. And you need to – this is it. It's only 1 year, so you've only got 1 year to impress. Get yourself sorted out and you know, get yourself training. I did. I got myself training, got myself fit, and then it sort of went up from there. And then I probably had, you know, 2.5. I injured a knee again, actually, in my left knee at the start of this one of the seasons. So I had 2.5 really good years of South Australia, and then some contractual things didn't quite work, and that's why I went to Brisbane. But I just started bowling well, so. I wish I had worked it out earlier, whether I would have played for Australia, probably not, because I think, you know, Lee and all those guys were still around. But the other part of moving to Queensland as well is my dream at that point in time was to win a Sheffield Shield. It was not necessarily huge plans to play for Australia, although, you know, when I left Adelaide, it was sort of being spoken about. I was around the mark, but I just wanted to. For me, a dream sitting watching the Sheffield Shield on TV, you know, watching as a young kid South Australia win it, which is the last time they won it, 96. I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to do that. I wanted to win a Sheffield Shield. So moving to Brisbane was probably more that motivation than, you know, I'm going there to play for Australia, because I think I would have played for Australia if I stayed here. But it all happened late, and that's the thing. So I wish I had worked it out earlier, but I still managed to play 27 tests, 19 one days, a couple of T20s. You know, I'm pretty proud to sit here and say I've done that. So,
and you got a baggy grain, which
that's right. Ages. Sorry, ask that question.
Okay. I was going to say, do you put it on every now and then? Just walk around the house?
Nah, I don't put it on. No. I have it sitting in my wardrobe, and I must admit I have it in view of every day when I get ready for work or whatever I do. I still look at it. I've, you know, mates come over and family come over sometimes that they want to see it. Never put it on. They'll let it put it on, but they don't want to touch it and see it. But yeah, it's still in view. Don't worry about that.
So. Good.
Yeah,
love that. No, you got to have it in view, baby.
Well, to be honest, right. I'd be flexing around the house. I'm shocked you don't.
You'd be wearing it on the job.
Well, you walk around.
Yeah,
stars.
I'll try it.
How old were you when you lost that that South Australia contract?
I would have been probably about 23, I think, roughly.
Okay, right. What was that like?
23.
Like, oh, what was that like meeting, I guess, you have where they're like, did you think dream over, I'm fucked?
Yeah, basically, yeah. But and then all of a sudden I think straight back to, fuck, why didn't I train harder?
Yeah.
You know, why didn't I say no to a couple of mates on a Friday or Saturday night? You know, just straight away it's like, fuck, you're an idiot. And in those situations, I mean, I've witnessed it over the last couple of years, when you lose a contract or lose something like that, you always blame someone. It's the coaching staff or it's this or it's that, where – I was straight away. I knew. I was like, "You're an idiot. You had this opportunity, and you've absolutely fucked it up." And then, but in the space of 3 days, I got it back.
So you didn't have too much time to wallow.
I didn't have too much time to worry about it. But straight away, it was fuck. This is it. First of all, I couldn't believe I got it back. But this is it. And to be honest, it was exactly that. And for all of a sudden, I probably showed a bit of maturity, which I hadn't shown. And realise what was given back to me, and away we went. So yeah, I mean, I vaguely remember it. It was just, you know, that conversation where you called in. You know, it's that time of year, and you know, this time where, you know, this, unfortunately we're not going to offer you a contract this year, and you can go back to club cricket and, you know, try and earn one back and dominate. And I was like, fuck, that's all right. Club cricket doesn't pay anything. What am I going to do? For a living. So that was it. Was a nice period, but again, in the space of a few days, thankfully got it back and away we went from there.
You were saying how you weren't expecting to play for Australia. At a certain point, you were like, because of the bowlers that were in the team.
Mm.
Obviously, one of the things that you want in your national side is like settled, everyone's there. There's not really much like who's going to be in, who's going to be out, which is, I guess, largely where we're at now. Specifically with our bowling cartel.
Yep.
Is that like, if you've got, like, if you're a young bowler in Australia now, like your Lance Morris or someone who they sort of speak about, outside of the resting policy, there's sort of like, you've got no shot of getting in the side. Is that, what's that like? Is that disheartening? Is it hard to stay motivated in a situation like that?
It wasn't like that, because I saw the guys that, you know, around the time that I could have played early 20s, mm, as I said, was McGrath, Gillespie, Lee, Bickle, Kasperwitz, a decent lot. So I never really worried about who I was going to replace and all that. It was just more about trying to play consistent cricket.
Yep.
And then even when I got to the point, you know, Siddle was in there, Johnson was in there, Pattinson was in there, Stark was sort of coming through. Ben Hilfenhouse was there, Doug Bollinger was there.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
they had a pretty good established lineup as it was. So for me, it was never that. As I said before, I never really thought too much ahead about who am I going to replace, or I've got to be in that team, or I should be in that team. It's more about if I'm just taking wickets and I'm doing the right thing, then I'm going to get picked. That was sort of what it was. So and then I managed to get in, you know, and at that point in time, it was, we probably had that rotation stuff. We had enough, you know, I was one of those guys that you could probably rest Hilfenhouse and I'd come in, or you'd rest Bollinger and Mitch rest Mitch and Bollinger would come in, and whatever it was. So it was never really an issue around that for me. But I mean, that was the rotation thing. That's where it's all come from that, you know, rest rotation. And, sometimes it was taken out of our hands. Now, I remember playing a test match in the West Indies after we had a tough first test, and it was a 3-day break. And, you know, it took a lot out of us, but I got told I was resting because my numbers and GPS numbers or whatever it was were quite high. I'm resting in the second test. And I said, no, I'm not resting, because ultimately the old story goes, if you rest and give your spot up, someone goes, well, then you're not going to get it back. So
yeah. That
was always my mentality. And if I was fit and I knew I could put 100%, you know, 100% in for the team, that I need to, and I'm bowling well enough, and I need to play. So the situation as is now, it's just it's a hard thing for someone like Lance, for someone like Scott Boland. Obviously, Bolo's a bit he's a bit bit older, but Lance is probably just going to have to bide his time. Unfortunately, I know that they're chomping at the bit to play him because I've seen him a bit this year, Lance Morrison. He's just such a good bowler. You know, he's what's he 26. He's got the beautiful action. He bowls absolute good pace. So the temptation's obviously going to be there, but you, like with what the guys are doing now, you can't unless there's a real issue of you know they need to rest someone, which I don't think that's going to happen when it comes to this group. There's not going to be a huge change until one of them actually goes down or actually finishes. So it's just one of those things again where you just have to bide your time and you know not get frustrated by that. You've got to wait and actually and I guess respect what those guys and learn off those guys and what they're doing and how well they do it.
Is there a point you reach as a bowler where you can basically say like I'm not getting rotated? Like with these four guys or three, would they be able to? Are they sort of at a point now where they're like, nah? I mean, I guess like even last summer they got rotated, didn't they, for bowling?
Yeah,
but did. Can you reach that point? Do you think, or is it?
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, knowing these guys and knowing Starkey got rested for a Boxing Day test.
Come on.
Seriously. And he hated that. And I'm trying to think if I played that. I can't remember if I was around then. So I might have played for him actually. But I think don't quote me on that. But giving up your spot now is just not what these guys and the thing I love about it is obviously one day cricket's important, T20, yeah, it's important, international stuff, but I know these three love test cricket and it wouldn't surprise me if they give up, you know, an international format, whether it be T20 or internet or one days to play, you know, to play longer in the Red Bull game because I know they love it. So I think the only way that they probably would rest, I don't think we'll see it this summer, would be, you know, a five test series, for instance, and you know, someone like a Stark might bowl 40-odd overs, you know, or any of the bowlers would bowl 40-odd overs and then there's a three-day turnaround or 45 overs in the game, something like that, which doesn't happen very often with a quick or even more. Sometimes it does, but depending on the wickets you get. So in a five, so next, for instance, next year, I think it's India in five tests, and I think it's England after that the next summer. So in situations like that, that's when you probably look likely to get rested. But I know these guys would be fighting, you know, tooth and nail to not miss out on a test match. I know that for a fact.
As of time of recording, we're sort of we're midway through a Pakistan series, and it already looks over after one test, putting them to the sword. We got the West Indies next. I expect the same treatment. Like outside of India and England, Test cricket is pretty weak at the moment. Yep. Do you fear for the Red Bull game sort of moving forward, given the rise of T20 and franchises and in India's sort of global control of that format?
Well, I'm concerned about the global control. There's no doubt about that. The franchise stuff is a danger. There's no doubt that the IPL, which is such a great tournament, don't get me wrong, that you know they have a window for that now. The concerning part is there's talk, and there has been now for a number of years. But I read an article the other day that looks like next year could be the year for the second window for the IPL, which to me I don't agree with. But
so they'll do two comps.
Supposedly going to do two comps. So they'll do one in May, or is it April, May, and then they might do one in September, October, for instance, which I think I don't. And money quite. Don't quote me on those times, but that's going to be a concern because we see now that the amount of cricket that's jammed in because those big blocks have been taken by it's really only the IPL that takes time out of the cricket calendar. You know, we don't block off a period here for Big Bash, you know, because we still play Test cricket in our summer. So that concerns me. I think the red ball, I've been hearing a long time that it's dying. I've been hearing the white ball, the 50 over stuff's dying. I don't see that, but in saying, as you say there, just thinking about it right then is I don't see it because we have such good series against India and England.
Yeah.
We don't play, you know, South Africa have dropped off, although I think they're coming back. I think the strength of South African cricket's growing again. New Zealand cricketer, it seemed to be around the mark. But you're right. It's just thinking about it right there on the spot. It you know, we don't really have good competition against any other. I guess we say that at home. It's really easy to. We're a lot better at home than we are away,
for sure.
I hate to think that it is dying, and I've been saying that for a while. But what is concerning is Sri Lankan cricket. They're in big trouble. They've just gone through another sacking of their board because of various things, and they didn't have a certain number of representatives outside the government. So that's political. Mm. As you said, Pakistan. Well, I thought Pakistan would be a lot stronger than what they showed the other day. I think their batting unit's really good, and their bowling unit as well is pretty well rounded. But we saw that the West Indies. Well, we know that their focus at the moment, and has been for a long time, unfortunately, is on white ball stuff, because their earning capacity, yeah, locally, is nowhere near what it. Well, it's to be honest with you, and I don't know the exact numbers, but our state cricketers will probably get more. Top state cricketers will probably get paid more than West Indies at home, so yeah, they need to go off and find, IPLs and CPLs and PSLs, all the T20 competitions to make money. So, which is really sad. So, yeah, look, the long-winded answer, I guess. I think we're always going to be strong against. I think South Africa are coming back, and I think New Zealand. So let's say four nations. Mm. But we do need the Sri Lankas, to be strong. And then the West Indies. I mean, the West Indies at the moment weren't even the World Cup. That doesn't sound right.
No, it does not.
No, it doesn't.
Not up against those sides in the 80s.
Seriously. Anyway, yeah. Look, I love Test cricket, if that counts for anything.
Well, so do I. And I think Rhino does too.
I couldn't live in a world.
That's my preferred.
Between the three of us, we've got three lovers right now.
Three absolutely.
That's right.
Exactly. I couldn't imagine right.
Three out of three, so it must be strong. It must be okay.
That's right. Exactly.
We've been doing some work with McDonald's this summer, Ryan, and we've been talking about Macca's Classics, but we were tasked with taking some recreating some classics, like some famous catches, the other week, and they started playing them out during the cricket broadcast, which has been embarrassing and humbling because we didn't take great ones. But
and the ones that we did take, they've
edited out.
They've been
put. Oh, right.
Yeah, they've been left on the cutting room floor, mate. Surprise, surprise.
Not favourable editing. But we would like to know what your favourite catch of all time, whether you could be one you've taken, could be one that you've seen taken, either when you're actually playing, but putting you on the spot, favourite catch.
There's two that come to mind straight away. And the one of Glenn McGrath, where he tries to take it two-handed here in Adelaide, actually takes it one-handed on the backward square boundary.
Yep.
I love that one. The other one would be Booney's catch off Warney's hat-trick.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Great catch.
Two great catches. Now, I'm not going to reveal it. We may or may not have attempted those. I'm not going to say
we may or we may not
we
have.
Cannot.
I've also been led to believe that Pigeon was out of position.
He was. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Had he been in position, you're talking about a regulation down the throat catch.
Correct.
However,
yeah, that's right.
The fact he was out of position creates the drama that we've loved ever since.
Yes.
Because it's an insane catch.
It's insane. Yeah. And he's so gangly that it just looks more impossible.
Have you ever taken one?
The fact he took it one-handed.
Yeah.
Have you ever taken one leaping forward like that? Very difficult to do.
A couple leaping forward. I'm just trying to think. My best catch would have been, I took a pretty good one off Mitch at Adelaide Oval in that Ashes series in 2013 at Fine Leg, which I didn't see until late, and then sort of plucked it out of the air somehow. At pace, obviously, because I may have been out of position then as well. I might have been a bit close. Probably the best one I took would have been, I reckon it was in my first game, which unfortunately I don't think is on any footage of it, but at Allan Border Field, I think Andy Bickle hit it and I was running back, again, probably out of position. I was in close and reached back over my head, dived back over my head and took it one-handed. A bit like Fatty. Remember the Fatty Vorton one?
Yes, yes.
Not quite as good as that. Not quite as good as that, but similar in a way there. That was probably my best one. But catches, yeah.
Oh, mate, that's it. That's it. So you've got a couple of good ones there.
Good list.
No, yeah. That's a great list. Yeah. Mate, look, thank you very much for coming on. It's been great to chat with you and share a bit of time. All the best with the summer. Hopefully the Big Bash gets back. Is it on tonight?
Yeah, we're on tonight. We're playing tonight. Playing the Thunder tonight.
Good luck.
We're ready. We're ready, I can see that.
All right, chomping at the bit. So we might have a look at you then.
Yeah, exactly.
We might have a little look at you then.
Mate, all the best. Thanks for chat.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Legend, it's been great. Mate. Thanks very much.
Thanks, boys. Thank you.
Bye.
Could you two just not talk anymore?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.